Madam Chair, Thank you for the opportunity. We are here to present our experience with the Water Services Act, Act 108 of 1997. What we are going to do is to share what we have been doing and all the successes and challenges in implementing the Act. And of course, we also share with you the latest developments in terms of what it is that we are doing as a department towards responding to those challenges. If acceptable to you, then I want to then request to take us through the presentation.
There was no national legislation for water supply and sanitation. Water service as we now know it. The old Water Act, the Act of 1956, only dealt with water resources. So there was nothing about water supply and sanitation to people. And then we had, soon after the new government came into power, we had the white paper on community water supply and sanitation published in 1994, and then the Water Service Act was promulgated in 1997. As the first national legislation on water supply and sanitation. In other words, it laid down the policy and regulation of the water board and municipal water business, and also the role of the Minister of Water Affairs and Forestry in this business. It's also important, always people say, what is Act 108 of 1996? That's the Constitution. So we've got both Act 108 and of 97. The Constitution addresses the right to individuals to access basic water, and that will then enforce it or take it forward into the Water Service Act. It also gives municipalities the executive authority and the right to administer the provision of water services within their areas of jurisdiction. And what are the roles of national and provincial government to regulate the effective performance of local government in terms of Water Services Act? It's quite important. While national provincial government has authority to regulate, they've also got an obligation to support and strengthen the capacity of local government. So often we see those two items in conflict. When do we must be support and strengthen, and when do we must be regulate? In 1997, there was the current suite of municipal laws were not in effect yet. The Municipal Systems Act and all those acts. And therefore, the Water Services Act was drafted as a flexible developmental legislative framework in the absence of detailed municipal legislation. It promotes support and strengthening local government while creating mechanisms for the effective monitoring by consumers and provincial and national government. And it also set the possibility of national norms and standards and water service developmental planning and established statutory bodies to support and assist local government. What were the progress and achievements to date? And we were in, before this committee in around 2001, some regulations that I'll come later to. Let me touch on some of the achievements. Very importantly, in sections 2, 3, and 11, in and other sections, the Act laid make it a very important cornerstone of the Act, the right of access to basic water supply and basic sanitation. And the successes we had, in this repeated throughout the committee, are quite aware of this. People serve the basic water, over 18 million serve the basic sanitation, more than 10 million, and 16 million people have access to free basic water. Section 4 deals with the issue of cut-off and limitation of supply, and often a sensitive issue. But it was water boards have done so. It's also important to note that in section 9 says that the minister may prescribe compulsory national standards, and the minister decided to execute that authority. And in 2001, we were in front of this committee with draft regulations. We had several interactions with this committee, so we published regulations to lay down compulsory national standards that deal with drinking water quality, quality of service, etc. We also looked at section 10, which says the minister may prescribe norms and standards in respect of tariffs. The same process was followed also before this committee, before it was finalized. This regulation had to be done in consultation with the Minister of Finance and was also published. Another set of regulations was those dealing with contracts between the authority and the service provider, for example, between a municipality and, if they say, for example, the appointed private company as provider. The Act says the minister can publish items that must be in a contract. So we went through the whole process to develop such a set of regulations that if we want to have a contract, these are the items that are, that will be a must, that must be a must item in such a contract. The Act also said that municipalities may have bylaws, or must have bylaws, but we can, the minister can publish model bylaws. And we developed those bylaws, which will quite help the municipalities that they don't need to hire their own lawyers, that they can just use these model bylaws. The same with model contracts, that's a kind of contract between a municipality and a service provider. We had a good partnership with the Association of Water Utilities as a water board and SALGA, and we developed a model contract which can be used for such agreements. This model contract, for example, say in the case of dispute, they should, we shouldn't go through a legal dispute, they should come to the department as regulated to mediate. Going further about progress around section 30 to 18, those five or six sections deal with water service development plans. We've seen a whole process which supported municipalities to develop their development plans. And currently, about 90% have drafted water service development plans as prescribed. In terms of section 8, provision for appeals, we handled some of those appeals. And then, very importantly, section 22 says the minister must monitor the performance of water service institutions. We developed a checklist in 2005. We had the first round to do that. And I think the whole monitoring process in terms of drinking water quality is also part of this, the importance of the obligation of the minister to monitor the performance of all institutions. Institutions cover, in this case, municipalities as well as water boards. Section 67 and last bullet deals with, say, there must be a national information system. We've developed such a system with, for example, it consistently reports on progress made in regard to water service delivery. And we, as sector department, provide such information to the presidency, to DPLG, and other government departments, housing work. An area that was neglected in the first few years is the issue of water service intermediaries. Just for background, an intermediary in terms of the Act is an institution that will do the job on behalf of the municipality. For example, farmers, mining companies that have got private land, and they're actually supposed to do it on to provide service on behalf of the municipality. We developed a toolkit and a framework for this, and currently it's being piloted in the Cape Winelands District Municipality. It's progressing quite well. Let me just chair my question very brief on this slide, because you have a full presentation on drinking water quality. Section 62 talks about the monitoring, and then we've got the Regulation 5 under those national norms and standards that deals with the drinking water quality. It compels the municipality to have a suitable sampling program in place. And in 2004, we did a survey that say that less than 50% of municipalities were monitoring the quality of water. So we initiated our drinking water quality regulation program, and currently, as reported before in this committee, we are proud to say that it's now 95% of municipalities that are reporting samples. There's still outstanding work to be done, for example, for us to audit those reports that we get from municipalities. When it comes to water boards, there's a whole component in the Water Service Act that deals with water boards, section 28 to 50. Oversight, we established as a department, the chief director, institutional oversight, to look over, to oversee water boards functioning. And I could also say there were separate acts for other water boards. Rand Water had their own act. There was a Botswana water company which was also incorporated into the new act. So the act replaced several individual water board acts, a few of those acts. And in terms of those sections, the department started to provide oversight. And currently we can report that water boards are complying with all aspects of the Public Finance Management Act, as noted during the water board's annual reporting hearings. For example, they submit annual reports, business plans, and the audited financial statements, performance reviews, and quarterly corporate reports. But Madam Chair, I'm aware that you as a committee engage with the water board on this, and also those that didn't comply, there were one or two that didn't comply with all the requirements. What has not worked, I want to now move to what we see is areas that have not worked as good as I think the intention was. When we started implementing the Water Service Act, we were too supported, because local government needs a lot of support. And often that was seen by some people and often municipalities as too a soft approach. And we have now reached the stage, and I think the whole issue around drinking water quality has necessitated that we need to reach the stage where regulations that are legal regulations need to be enforced mostly. And that is the point that we have come now. However, when the minister wants to effectively regulate some, there are insufficient mechanisms within the current act. For example, the speedy rectification of detected non-compliance without having to depend on litigation or lengthy legal procedures. So we see that as a gap. There's also not sufficient power for the minister to intervene on the underperforming municipalities. The one thing that was never implemented in terms of the act was provision for statutory water committees. They were not established because the old development of local government act was superseded. So there was no need for this. There's a section of the act that had been was not never put into effect. What are the I think because of the local government legislation, we set out in around 2002-2003 to look at a new strategy for water services, and we developed a water services strategic framework for water services, which was approved by cabinet in 2003. And that strategy now gives us a comprehensive approach to the provision of water services. It puts forward a vision for the water service sector for the next 10 years. We are already halfway through the 10 years. And it also sets an umbrella framework to enable the sector vision to be achieved. We are currently also look at the regulations and see how they should be revised. To, for example, deal with water safety plans, and especially around the 2010 host cities. Madam Chair, during public hearings that your committee held on 3rd and 4th June of this year, and you noted the following, that the challenges and problems reported by municipalities warrant for immediate surface terms, and part of the review of the Water Service Act should address this concern by creating an enabling environment for effective regulation, particularly of drinking water quality. So what corrective steps is the department taking? We started the process to review the Water Services Act, and we start also a process of consultation with other national departments. I'm not going through that whole list, but I think all the main national departments, as well as sector players, are in that list. I just want to now, in the last part of the presentation, Madam Chair, touch on what are the areas that we think we should review when we review the Water Services Act. The current Act says that what currently can happen is that another national department or a provincial department might promulgate an act that has an impact on the Water Services Act. Or they can publish the act with last minute consultation. And we believe that a review should provide that such legislation may only be introduced after the Water Affairs Minister has been formally consulted. For example, a province, any province can't make an act about water services without formally consulting our minister. Currently, provinces can also implement the Act without a framework. In other words, that the province can take it forward and implement as they deem fit. We think in a review we should provide for coordinated implementation and allocation of powers and funds to prevent this confusion of what is the role of province and what is the role of national government. Linking to that, Madam Chair, I think you are aware that there's a process by DPLC to revise the policy on municipalities and provinces, a white paper review process. And we as a department is currently busy to develop a draft position paper, especially on powers and functions of municipalities. I think this position paper will be extremely important in when you take the review forward. And also we want to use this position to engage with DPLG on what we see as can work and what hasn't worked. We should also in the review look at the clear distinction between authority and a provider and how the water service provider should operate in terms of the Municipal Systems Act and Municipal Finance Management. An important issue is how the municipalities select and appoint external water service providers. If they decide that they realize they can't do the function themselves and for appoint another municipality or a water board or a private company. What are the exemptions and what basis shall they decide? For example, if they take a decision that from a national perspective is not the right decision, how should the department and the minister implement such a decision? So those are important areas that it touches on the Section 78 of the Municipal Systems Act. When we come to our role as regulator, and it comes back again to the session you had on drinking water quality, we believe it's not comprehensively spelled out in the existing Act. It provides for the enabling legislative environment through regulation strategy, but we believe there should be more authority for the minister to make regulations and also the role in dispute resolution between an authority and a provider. And then, very importantly, in the case of non-compliance, the current Act provides for a lengthy procedure through the province. We believe that in a review we should look at clear powers of intervention for the minister or the NEC, and the powers to set key performance indicators. That whole area of intervention and how to act in terms of non-compliance is very important. We should strengthen that in a review that area. When it comes to planning is important, but currently there's no linkages with the water resource management issues. Planning processes should be aligned with the IDP process, planning oversight by the department, and also consultations with catchment management agencies for integrated planning. I think the obvious area of planning can be strengthened. And then consumer rights and obligations neglected in law. The current Act provides neither for the rights and obligations for consumers. They just take it. So as well, we say we should spell it out in when you review Act, as well as the right to complain to the minister as an officer. What do the public do if they don't get any joy from the municipality or from their service provider? Is there a right to complain to the minister as an officer? That should also be part of the review. The whole issue of provision of water and sanitation on private land is a neglected issue, and it's for the minister very important. And that's why we ask that to develop this guideline for private property. We need a revision on water service intermediaries and to more clearly define what are the rights and obligations of these intermediaries. And also a clear role for authority of the municipality when the intermediaries are not compliant. And then develop a framework for financial support and subsidies to such intermediaries. When can it be given and what are the conditions of such intermediaries? When I come to the water board, I think that water, I suppose, will in their presentation dwell on this. We see, as from the department side, we need to improve the governance and oversight of water boards. We developed an oversight process, but there are some gaps. For example, the ministerial authority over water boards must be spelled out, the ministerial approval of budget, business plans, and also the chief executive's packages. Specific alignment with provisions of the Public Finance Management Act, including shareholder compacts, which is a development that can. A shareholder compact where the minister, as chairman, shareholder of all the boards, can spell out exactly what she requires from all the board, and also around financial management. We don't see people often ask what is the role of water boards in terms of catchment management agencies. It's not planned to put it in the Water Service Act, but I think we should, when we review the Water Service Act, it should be as flexible that it should provide for such access. So that is an area that can be debated. Currently in the Act, it does say that a water board can be disestablished, but there's no clear process or reasons included in the current Act. And it often has landed into a kind of a deadlock. The water board is clearly not performing, but how do you just establish and on what basis can you just establish a water board? So we believe the review must include reasons for this establishment of a water board. And it also should bring more clarity and direction on boards and the appointment of its members. And then a very important point, the current Act is very vague on water board tax. Just say the minister must and we believe it should be changed to say that the minister must approve. I think very clear that the minister must approve all the board tariffs. I've come to many ministers before, but just the monitoring is important, and also incentives to provide information that may be a possibility, but also obligation to share information. I think this is my last slide, Madam Chair. When I had a discussion with Peter Hansen, he said he will expand on this issue of finance and revenue. Currently, the problem with revenue and the taxes collected by municipalities is that it's collected from water and sanitation that is used elsewhere. And that's why we believe the reprinting of water service is important, that the money collected from water and sanitation would be put back into the water and the pumps for water. That we use for that. So the whole issue of ring-fencing of the water and sanitation business should be looked at. Also the issue of asset management, that maintenance and rehabilitation be put into legislation. And then very clearly, when you ask often other municipalities what is the income from water service, they can't tell you because it's not properly separately reported. So we can't regulate and control that money needs to go back into water service. So that must be clearly stated. And then the whole issue around preparation and implementation of required plans and such. Madam Chair, that's the end. A very brief overview of a subject that we can talk all day, but I hope it gave members some broad basis for further discussion. Thank you.
Thank you very much, I'm going to waste any time and ask the members to engage on the submission that the department has made.
Thank you very much, what is said that the proper is to regulate water to non-consumption instead of limiting consumption. I found it this statement is very much correct, because when we look into how the food is potential actually giving to save water, find some of the things that are not really compliant. So I just want to find out what's the weather. The business intended actually 1975, the role of the minister sort of to make sure that the minister can take any steps. Very good at the general movement, but I don't think they are taking care of the quality water and of contribution, and also of making sure that the infrastructure is in the right condition to provide all the people in the area. And also, I also wanted to know whether is this also mean that both the two are now drinking water, clean water in the area. Giving the minister this right to make sure that those people in the rural areas also do get adequate clean water in their areas so that they don't have to drink water, sharing the water in the room from anyone. That's the intention. So I just wanted to find out. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to make sure this, you remember last year during the year there was this court case where they forcing the municipality to give more water. What effect is it going to have on this act and also in the future? What effect is it going to have on all the other municipalities and maybe the whole world? And then we can chop and change into this bill as we want, but are we making sure that municipalities receiving X amount of money for service delivery and water and sanitation and those things? But correctly, you were saying that money are not being to install new water pipelines, dams. What are we going to do to enforce municipalities to use the money that they receive to pay the water bill, but then also to pay it and make sure that this money are used to provide extra water, extra clean water to the poorest of the poor? Because the problem now is that every time I complain about it, but especially into your smaller communities, small towns there in the Eastern Cape and Northern Cape and Free State, Northwest, they're receiving this money for water, but they didn't pay the water bill firstly, and secondly, when they received the money, they used it to pay salaries and pay all funny kinds of things, but they didn't pay or build new pipelines or keep new clean water. So what are we going to put into this bill if we're going to change it, to enforce them to do these kinds of things? Thank you.
Any other members? No? Can we just, from my side, ask the following? Can we start by saying that after the act was promulgated, very many different things happened in the country. To the extent that we have new forms of municipalities also. And more than that, there were other acts that followed also. For example, in the municipalities and all of that, in the sphere of local government. Now, one thinks that out of all of this, a number of contradictions arose. To what extent has Rock been able to look at the contradictions that arose out of the fact that we have new systems of municipalities and the fact that there were subsequent legislation that happened after that? Because even in the reviews that you are talking about yourself, I don't see you making sufficiently those realities that have happened. One case in point is the aspect of disconnection of water. To the extent that the Constitution says everyone in South Africa has the right to access, one seems to think that a contradiction then emerges at the municipal level where they can put on your bill I'll cut the water. Now, how do we get this right? And you can say a constitution if you act it, and then another peer says, I'll cut your water. Now, I must say that the past period in my constituency, I've been dealing quite a bit with the water cuts from the city of Cape Town in my constituency. In some instances, I have to bring the entire whoever to come and restore the water. Because even if you don't have water, even if you have a big water bowl, South Africa says they must be 3 kilometers of water every day. Now, there's even that. Now, I do think, how currently do you think the Act is assisting? And if you agree with me that there are contradictions, how do you foresee you would want to address this contradiction that has emerged in all these different efforts? I do think that it's a big mistake that they have given a municipality the power to be regulating water in sometimes very negative manners in the way that they are. So that's the first one that I do want to know. Now, of course, you know, there are cases already that appeared before the court in this instance. And in most instances, the court ruled in favor of the citizens and said that we need to uphold the right to access the water, and water needs to be restored. So that's the first one that I really want, because that one bothers me tremendously, because even those that appeared before us, they told us in the committee, no, we cut water. So it's not a rumor out there, you know, it's on record in Parliament that they tell us that aspect. So I think that's the first one that I do want to say. The Act is very specific in its objective. The first one I've articulated now, norms and standards, water services development plan. So without going through all of this, one of the things for our oversight that I picked up there, the following. You have the Department of Water taking forestry, you have parental legislators, you have a municipality. Somehow you don't see this in sync. Somehow there's a perception through the other two services in this country that if you say the word water, it's dwarf. There's no one else. Even if the water, even if they reticulate, even if they need to take care of water quality and treatment plants and so on, water equals dwarf, nothing else. Now, how have we been able to, how do you envisage to correct that? Because the Constitution does say it's national competence. But subsequently, at the level of providing services, it's at the local level. Now, the objectives of the Act, one, I don't get the impression that they even think that those objectives are sustained. To us only and not them. So then the issue of water quality will come in, the issue of tariffs will come in, and so on. Let me just cite another example. In most instances, when you appear before the committee on tariffs, the water board that has asked for increase and all that long processes that go through, and of course we agree with you, we need to review that entire system. It's something that doesn't gel very well, how you derive at all of that. But where there is no water board, let me take the city of Cape Town again. There's no water board. The only water board in Western Cape is Overberg. What right does a municipality have or not have to institute tariffs? Because it says that these are the processes we need to follow them as a water board and so on. Does the municipality have the right just to, in the instance again, our tariffs have increased in Cape Town? Do they have the right just to increase it? Or how are they supposed to do consultation in this instance? And is the Act not silent on that reality also? Because it means that we're introducing an unequal, or there's no from certificates and that's where I say my benchmark all the time. So I think if we could, if you can speak to us about that. Also, my main gripe is I don't see the three tiers all in sync insofar as the Act is concerned with all its different provisions. They seem to be disappearing when it comes to the local level. Let me stop there for now, and I'm sure we should have another round of questions. But Doc, if you can respond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. Regarding response to a number of questions, but I'll just limit myself to the first two questions that came up. And the question to the Constitution, whether we are in fact complying with the Constitution given its provisions. And of course, the huge problem in the rural areas where people are somewhat neglected in terms of water provision. Given the Constitution, I don't think we are there yet in terms of compliance. We are working very hard to ensure that we comply. You have right. Of access to work, and you still have some South Africans and people in South Africa who don't even have access, and this gets very complicated when you start experiencing other environmental challenges like climate change, whereby some water bodies dry up and disappear altogether, and. It's also linked to the second question on the provision of water, particularly for rural people. Last week, for instance, the Director General of the Limpopo visited in some communities that are not getting water because of where they are. I personally was in Maputa then doing the same. Negotiating with the district municipality to say what is it that we are doing. And the local water board was also with us during those visits to make sure that at least we comply, to make sure that people have access or right access. And these are the challenges that we are faced with in as far as rural people are concerned. And again, the other thing that complicates for things that is where even the buying power is almost non-existent. Whoever wants to invest there, you start to think, when I invest, what do I get back as an investor? And that means government, that the only person who has to go in there to make sure that people have water and have access to water. It's the reality that we are faced with, but we are engaged with municipalities to make sure that something is done. We are even thinking of drilling boreholes, like where you have boreholes that have dried up, we are thinking of drilling further down so that there is water for the people. In Maputa, for instance, the municipality indicated that they have water tankers and they don't think enough. We are looking at those possibilities of ensuring that more tankers are available for municipalities to supply the community with water.
Thank you, Chair. Madam Chair, I think many of the issues raised are actually comments. For example, the honourable members say we must regulate more effectively, we must impose we must empower the minister to intervene. So I think those need to take as comments and actually support our case. We need to review and we need to strengthen those issues. The other question that, the one question I think Mrs. van der Walt and Mr. Kornbrink, you are raising the same issue. I was referring to this orchid. I'm not quite sure Mrs. van der Walt says about the current issues that is conflict was minimum requirement. And I guess that she referred to the court case in Soweto, the previous court case. Can I just say for that, in that example, that the group of people took both the city of Johannesburg, Joburg Water, and our minister to court on the minimum quantity provided. They also tested our regulation in terms of the minimum water provided. The court, on the judge acting in judgment, looked at international practice, and he ruled that that regulation is fair because it laid down a minimum quantity. The judge used the words, it's a floor and not a ceiling. For example, we could lay down a minimum requirement, but we never put a ceiling, that this is a maximum. So any municipality worth the resources, that means the money as well as the sufficient water to provide more than the 25 meters per person today, can provide more, can provide 50 or even more than that. So in that specific case, the judge ruled that the people in that specific area, in that part of Soweto, and the city of Joburg has enough resources, enough funds to provide more than the 25. And in that case, it also. But it's not a general judgment that can apply across the country. Every case must be done on own merit. And that he also said that our regulation is fine because it only laid down a minimum, which is a floor and not a ceiling. I hope I've answered that one. Madam Chair, I also agree with Mr. Pomeran that it's not an issue of just changing the act, it's also implementation of that. And I think that we've tried to explain this. Not the act itself, how we implement the act. The issue of money being used elsewhere, we've got a problem there in terms of the equitable share is meant to provide for basic services. And the equitable share that municipalities get from nationality is an unconditional grant. So we can't say this must be used for water service. I think it's a wider debate than just a water issue. And I know many people are concerned about this. So it's a, through you, Madam Chair, an issue that we should in the review process, and you as a committee also take up at a wider front that the equitable share is unconditional. It's not something to be taken up with national trade as well. The issue of disconnections, I just want to read from the Act. Now, I think it's very important. The Act, the current Water Service Act, provides for what is, say, limitation and disconnection. But there are certain conditions to be met. And I think often a municipality doesn't comply with the full act. They just say they can limit or discontinue, but they didn't read the other things that they must comply with. The act says it must be fair and equitable. It must provide for a reasonable notice of intention. And other consumers shouldn't be prejudiced. It's an emergency situation for the consumer has. Oh, it can only be done and when a consumer has interfered with a limited or discontinued service, for example, if there's vandalism. And very important is section 4.3c. It's not the result in a person being denied access to basic water services for non-payment, where that person proves to the satisfaction of the relevant water service authority that he or she is unable to pay for basic services. So that municipality in the case that you quoted, Madam Chair, clearly didn't comply with the Act. Yeah. It says section 4 of the Act provided talk about conditions, and then section 4.3 talks about the procedures required for limitation or discontinuation, and then section 4.3c talks specifically about where the person can't pay for service. So the Act provides for this, but others only when certain conditions have been met. And I think often it doesn't, municipalities may not apply the Act in its full sense.
Let me respond to that quickly by saying do you read this in conjunction with the Municipal Systems Act and the Ground? Because I think that's where they you know, because they won't have already built into the existence of this one. And then both in terms of their powers that they have in the municipality and the other acts, if I can find the clause, then I can point out to you where the contradiction is. But I hear you in this act. My question really was the contradiction that is there, because it is the truism that these clauses are connected.
I think the last thing that you raised, where the chair was issued about that, and you're also right that currently in the Act it just says section 10, the minister can prescribe monster standards and municipalities must comply with that broad framework of that successful model is set up. But you're correct, currently the Act is not the real approval of that either of water boards or municipalities. So that is, I only agree with you. That this is an area that should be reviewed.
Chair, with respect to the presenter, I mean, some of the questions that are raised have not been adequately responded to. For instance, the question was, is the water quality in urban areas and rural the same? Number one. Number two, you talked about regulation, not in. The regulations need to be enforced more strictly. What are the implications of that? Three, not sufficient, there is not sufficient power for the minister to intervene on the underperforming WFA legislation. What does that mean? Finally, the question of, I raise the question, there are some that cause the government to have a number of defects in the law to legislate themselves. So we'd like to say as to what steps have been taken, and when we discover this defect in the law, we are now, that was 1997, and we are now 2008. So these are, I think, there is no response. I regret very much. I think we need some answers to these questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I apologize for arriving late. I just want to note here a case from the department whether the proposed changes and reviews and regulations that they speak about in the presentation that I took time off to read it now, since it wasn't here, whether all of the changes to the Act and the regulations can be done within the framework of the Constitution, and whether there are any area of current implementation of water provision that cannot be adequately addressed without us actually looking at the Constitution. And if there are, are you able to inform us of those areas?
Thank you, Chair. Let me apologize to the Honourable Member for not adequately addressing all the questions. I think we will be going through one by one question to make sure that we do justice in terms of our responses. There is another question that came through, Mr. Chair, from your first, in terms of what just disappearing as you go towards the local level and whether there's anything that we are doing to correct that, given the fact that members of the community, when it comes to what they think of to us, rather than any local authority. This is a big challenge for them. I think it is also linked to the question that members raised earlier on around the fact that the Water Services Act came before other acts, particularly acts that relate to municipalities. And some contradictions among a number of pieces of legislation in as far as water services are concerned. the last question from the honorable member across on whether we can do anything outside the constitution. We have always looked at the constitution as a guiding piece of legislation. Whatever we do, we try everything possible to align our thinking to the constitutional imperative. Because if you do anything outside that framework already, you have a problem as a government department.
Thank you, Karen. Scholar Rodrigo will follow the question. Madam Chair, as reported in this committee, currently 90% of the municipalities report to us on a monthly basis about drinking water quality. Of that 90%, around 94% say they do comply. That means that there are 10% that doesn't report, and about 6% of the 90% that doesn't comply. So there are municipalities that doesn't comply currently with drinking water quality, mostly rural areas, smaller towns, our bigger cities, metros, water boards are fine. I think we have made available a list of those municipalities to the committee members that currently are not reporting or not complying. I know a number of those have also been called to report to this committee. What we see as an outstanding is for us also to audit those reports from those municipalities that say they comply, that we can check on their monitoring whether they are actually right. So I hope I've answered the drinking water quality issue. On regulations, I think there are a number of ways to stick the regulation. That's why I agree with the member that in a review, we should definitely look at the power of the minister to regulate what she can regulate and also to act. I think one example is, for example, do we want to put up certain responsibilities for a municipal manager and things like that, that they should comply, that they can even be fined. The current act makes no provision for fining or legal actions. So that is the areas that we should look at. When we do the review, the detail hasn't been sorted out, but I think that's the areas we want to look at. The intervention, what should happen currently, the action that even this wants to intervene. The province is first intervened. When once an intervention by the province has failed, then only then can the Minister of Water Affairs and Forestry intervene. And say the province doesn't do anything, what happens then? That's the current kind of deadlock we are in. So that's the area we want to review, that if there's a problem, especially around drinking water quality, which is a health risk, how can our minister act without waiting for province to intervene, which can be a lengthy process? So we want to shorten that, in a review, shorten that whole process, that there should be quicker action. You can't wait for drinking water quality on such a long process. So that's the areas that we want to look at. How do we answer all of the gaps? Mr. Arendse, about the constitution, and Dr. McKinsey has mentioned that we are working on a discussion paper because DPLD is busy with this review of a white paper looking at provincial and local government. And we as a department said, let's put forward a discussion paper touching on a number of areas, province and municipalities, how do we engage on water services. And some of those things may, we haven't finished the discussion paper yet, but currently, as Dr. McKinsey said, the current review of my presentation focus, how can we amend the act in the current constitution? But obviously, when we take part in that debate, it will be a much bigger debate, and we may touch on other issues like amendment of the constitution. We want to put forward almost an ideal world, what we want to have for water services to function properly. We want to put the DPLD in place. If we want to municipalities to deliver on their promises, this is not the issue we want to see. And then we'll engage with DPLG at that level and say, can be done in terms of current legislation, do we need to implement legislation? So that's part of another bigger process. I hope I've answered all the members'
Thank you, Madam Chair. There was another question around 14 municipalities in the water board. I think that question was not addressed. The department, together with the National Treasurer, engaged in discussion to look at ways in which municipalities can actually pay water boards, because as you all know, water boards are the extension of the Department of Water, so they have to provide services. And we are fully aware that elsewhere in the country we do come across situations which are difficult to explain, where the municipality will just have negative perceptions around water board. And whatever the water boards are doing, municipalities are not prepared to pay for the service. We are working on a document. However, when you said it, it sounded more like water boards having to go to Treasury to report municipalities that do not pay. And the thinking later on was, no, let us get municipalities to indicate why they are not paying water bills, not the opposite. So if it is the opposite, municipalities feel themselves as untouchable at times. And that has also led to situations whereby municipalities will justify away with this water board. We can always come up with our own institution that will provide the service. These are the things that may actually start to talk to the Constitution as to how we manage this government institution. How do you ensure that the water service authority does not end up competing with other government institutions who, if you involve them, can bring about efficiencies in terms of service provision and the guidance that we can get from here will actually help us to us taking this forward, because it is quite a challenge, particularly where municipalities have their own way and have their own vision that does not involve or include water.
Thank you very much, ma'am. I'm actually not hearing quite very clearly in terms of those people who are deciding in the world in terms of getting water. I've also heard that the request from the department as well, because there are people who are still sharing water with animals in the spring, and their rights are not actually attended to, constitutional rights to get water, clean, potable water in their area. So I just wanted to find out, when are those people going to get those that water? Because it seems only people in the urban areas are being catered for. What about the people in the work area? Are they not included in the thing that all the people must get in there? They must have the consumer rights to have access to clean or potable water. So I just want to find out how long must those people in the rural area wait to get clean running water. Thank you.
Okay, the previous as the following, I take it that the department is saying that they are taking a review. I think some of the members are trying to express that they think that review is open, and that we really should have had the information before us now. We should have now spoken about the water service and the Indian Act as we are looking here, and not the current Act. And I think we should maybe discuss this in all its different aspects. One taking point here is the Act does not, the Constitution talks about access to water. Now, access to water does not mean the tap on it, it means sanitation in our view was interpreted in the Constitution in that way. Now, we still have a situation where three basic policies are not being applied in the aspect of sanitation, generally speaking, in the country. Some municipalities have done it, others haven't. I'm sure you have written something, but in one of your last presentations to us, you said that you have not completed the sanitation policy. So in this presentation, also, we see that you're not saying much about it. I think what we would want to do as a committee is maybe from our own selves submit to you also over and above this engagement what we think through our 4 years of oversight the emerging area problems in regards to the National Water Services Act. Of course, we can decide how we would want to deal with it. One of the aspects that I'm extremely looking in the Act is the economic aspect of water services and the appreciation of economic value of water in it. Although it talks about that there are some limits to the National Water Act, but we think that at this level, let me try to example, people decide to have food gardens, or the school decide to have food gardens. And as soon as they have a food garden, a huge role accompanies them. It means that economic activity at the poor level are enhanced immediately by a particular provision, which might not necessarily be yours, if, you know, the billings are being done, but there can be some influence in how that could be overcome. Let me conclude also by saying that I appreciate the answer on the tariff where there is a difficulty with some municipalities. Let me also just say it would have helped a lot if you have given us a snapshot globally of the country of what the bylaws really look like. Because yes, you've got the model, but I doubt it very much whether the implementation has occurred at a local level in them sitting together. So I think it will help if you can forward to the committee what the picture looks like around the country in the part of bylaws for water, whether they follow or not. Because if they haven't, then of course you have the right, or you shouldn't have the right to use your power on them in this regard. There's something that you have said that you wanted to change, and I got very worried when you said that the current asset base and water board tariffs and so on, you change, say the community so much through. Maybe you should clarify to us what is the role of Parliament in this regard, because the tariffs do come to the committee. As we all know, as countries, we can't do much about it, we can't chat about it, but we can't do anything further. We can make a recommendation to the minister. Now, do you envisage any change in that section also of the Act? Because we think that the role of Parliament are being extremely undermined in the way that that has been put together to bring legislation to us that we can chat about it, so we can appreciate it sufficiently. And I think it's not yourself, it's the Treasury in this instance, because it's not in your Act in that, but there in that Act. And then you talk about the fact that you know, the minister doesn't have anything enough place. What about that Act? I think it's the Public Finance Commission Act, whether what you are saying from the first of all, the Public Finance Commission Act is okay. I think all the other areas we should point out to the department. In talking to you, what do you think the areas should be that we need to engage with? But of course, I think we will be guided by think if you can just maybe there's no legislators maybe if the dwarf ship can be sold on the municipality, what the procedure is to uphold the competition, making sure that everyone can have a look. I really can promise you, I'll give you all the cases that I have. People being looked after within my position for 3 months of what they have been disconnected and the things that they have kept on. Dwarf? Not sure if there's anything that you want to respond to us on the last remark that you mentioned.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your summing up. I think what we'll do is to look at our notes and forward to the Chair on the information that she has requested. And through our office and panel. And once again, thank you to the members of the
spend more. Rules earn less, they spend less. It's a simple equation. I could show you how much, what they spend their money on, but rather, I'll show you another Markov effect. And that is, if you're earning less and you can't spend less, as a municipality in the rural area, then you will have less staff members. So we look at the staff members per 1,000 households in the rural, and there is your sanitation, there is your water. In the rural, it can be as low as one staff member per 1,000 households. In the urban, it could be three, it could be higher. Sometimes you'll find some anomalies that the reporting is not correct. A high figure like that could be a lot of laborers, you know, it could be a very flat pyramid. There could be reasons, but if you look at the trend, the urban municipalities are well catered for with money and well catered for with stock. The rural municipalities are poorly catered with money, poorly catered for with stock. So, the question was, why don't we force the municipalities to pay water bills? Now, this is the only slide that is not sorted in the room. But I sorted this by average day's debt outstanding for water bills. The only question. But I could have just as well sorted it in the room because I get the same answer. Grand water, blue water, no surprises there. Wishback Ridge, whichever market point you can go there as well. Semi as all the grand boys. The Pele, deep rural. The Pele will tie in with those human societies that I have at the far right and far left. So again, just a pure knockout. Richer people, more revenue, more expense, more staff, better ability to pay the water bill. So it's fairly logical. Catholic. This one to show you roughly what happens to the mix of now 20%, sometimes as high as 40, goes on infrastructure for water. The rest goes for other infrastructure. So a municipality has water, it has electricity, it has roads, it has a lot of things that it needs to look after. The water capex are divided by sanitation and water backlog, again urban, again rural. The high peaks are over here, the low peaks are there. What does this mean? Per household that is in arrears of water and sanitation. The household in arrears of water and sanitation, the rural are doing much poorer. They've got less capital money, not only less operational maintenance money. And I can show you the same picture. Whatever you look at. So, are we meeting the rural? Now, those previous figures came from National Treasury. These figures, I've tried to be independent. I haven't taken the Department of Water Affairs figures, I've taken Stats South Africa, General Housing Survey. I've taken the Census 2001 as well. So, from Census 2001, the General Housing Survey 2006, and I say, level of water services above IDP, mainly for service, but also in those taps and houses. IDP, which is a wall within 200 meters, below IDP, they, these lines are parallel. There's not much happening up here. Somehow, the population growth is being measured above IDP. These bands are not narrow. I haven't done the analysis, I was only invited on Friday, but if I did the analysis, I would probably be able to show you that this isn't the rule of this. But I have not done the analysis. Sanitation, I've combined flush to the sewer network, and I've combined the other flush, which is the septic tank. Because it is clear that that SA questioner didn't know the difference between the two, and said you got a very wobbly line here. I've put the two flush together, but exactly the same. Nobody's interested in VIP filter trims. Filter trims are out of reservation pipes, same thing constant, if you found narrowing in the other, and it's possibly reduction of lactic inflammation. But really the big growth, just as in water, the water the big growth is above obviously, sanitation the big growth is above obviously. Okay, I think that's sort of, that comes in. I can make this available to the members. I can make the spreadsheet available if you want to have one. I can take it up to the computer. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I saw you, you were sitting in on the discussion by the court. If you look at the review and some of the proposals made in the department document, for instance, the department are saying that, look, we need to be able to, the department needs to be able to intervene where necessary. And I do hear this in some of the slides, the sentence was exemption. In other words, the department says that look, we need to be able to do certain things, implement certain things, enforce certain things, but also we need to be able to make exemption. So, from your point of view, as in relation to the presentation by the department, do you think the view will begin to assist us? I just want to stop there briefly. You see, the reason why I'm speaking like this is that the disparity between urban and rural, we don't have to be convinced of it. It's part of the problem that we've been hammering on for years. So we with you on that. We know about that, and that's what I'm saying. But do you believe that the review, the way the department is looking at it, will begin to assist us, begin to deal with the rural problems? I just want to make another last part of what I wanted to say is that, you see, what we've been picking up in the committee is that I'm glad that you actually had on the water board, Bushcraft Ridge, you know, as one of those that are struggling, and some of the others, is that where you have the municipality not paying the water board, unable to pay the water. You also have a problem where the water boards are struggling. Right? Where in other cases, the municipalities are in a position to pay the water board. We find that the water boards are also not struggling, they can provide much better service in terms of providing bulk water, and where we had the crisis not so long ago, one of the water boards, one or two of the water boards, were even able to come in and assist the municipality that was struggling with a problem that occurred because the municipality didn't pay attention to a particular problem. So the water boards were called in and they would assist on the request of DWARF, the municipality. So, what I'm looking at, I'm sorry to say if I'm taking your time, what I'm looking at is that if the review can assist us to bring this to assist the young municipality, okay? And I heard the last part of the presentation when I walked in, the whole question, and I think it's in the last slide, of ring fencing money that has been collected from the provision of water services, ring fencing so that we can use it for first provision of water services. And I want to suggest also to the meeting that where money is collected for water services and not used for water services but other areas, there will also be a rule. I'm concerned about that. So that if the review takes into consideration all of that and can begin to assist us with all of that, then I want to suggest that it will bring us to the point where municipalities are also in the position to pay the water board, which will put the water board in the position provide the necessary water services in terms of providing bulk water. We should put the same water board in position to be able to assist us in future if they are on a strong footing with where any municipality lets any particular
were very curious, so we were hoping he wouldn't be honest with us, but we've discussed that, and we were saying to each other that what we picked up in all our oversight visits to all the water boards in all the provinces, right? Especially the rural water boards. He said, what we picked up is where the water board is on the edge, you know, about to be, or where we're beginning to think of the establishing a water board. If you really look at the situation, and if you look at the money owed to the water board by the municipality, then as a matter of fact, that particular water board that we're thinking of just establishing is actually become, if they receive, if they should receive that money, okay, because we're talking about large sums actually, then it makes them economically viable. So, in all of what I'm saying is that, do you think, I think it's a change reaction that we're talking about.
Yes.
So do you think the review that we're looking at, the department focus, will begin to assist us the all of, you know, the entire network? Thank you.
Can I take that question? Because this goes to the heart of the matter. If it does solve the financial problem, no amount of intervention will take you in. It's very good punishing a municipal manager by a municipal engineer because the treatment plant has a flood, if he or she does not have money to increase the capacity. It's a problem. So, 30 million failures increase. I could show you graphs of plants that are under capacity in the most rural water quality, where the water is running through faster than it should not be placed. So, we have to address financial problems. Now, I agree that Ray Moore is speaking after me, because then they can put another angle on one of our. Remember, this is your household. So, it's relative. It's not the absolute size, it's per household. If you took that yellow there, which is the equitable share given to the big system, you took those four yellows there, and you added them on the rural side, you would change the picture considerably without really affecting these guys. But I would argue that the current equitable share that is used to develop the dollar, the Additional Revenue Act budget, could be far more targeted towards rural municipalities. Because you can see how much yellow is here. It's going to make no difference in that way. They've still got enough money for the efficiency. That's just an efficiency. You add that with a much bigger municipality to a small municipality, it could make a substantial difference. I haven't done the absolute figures, but I'm convinced that no amount of intervention, no amount of forcing them to pay the water bills, because I've done some budgets for municipalities and section 38. The budgets do not matter. Saying we can operate this property, now how much money to collect? 80% of the people from the last quarter, 20% must pay. 20% can't pay for 100. You can do it across the country, you can do it with national intervention. You can't, by ring-fencing, you're not going to completely solve the problem. You need to realign the division of revenue. So you've got to go hand in hand with the National Treasury and DPLG. All the funding problems. When the funding is in place, there's no. When the funding is in place, there's no decision. Then turn intervention back. But turn intervention without the right funding, you might be able to solve the problem.
The big question is, Mr. Anderson, do you think that in the legislation sufficiently appreciates the urban rural divide or redress in a more broader manner? Because the Act, you know, came at a particular time 10 years ago, the Act speaks of all sorts of different things and so on. But I'm saying again, life moves on. The realities of transforming the country have absolutely dawned upon us. And in the also, why do we continue to have this urban-rural divide in water? And does our legislation not sufficiently assist in overcoming the urban and rural divide, and was it correct to devolve some of the functions to the municipality administration?
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to add something else to this panel. You see, we always, and if you can speak to any member of us, there's one thing that's always mentioned in any of the committees. It's the whole question of when we talk about equitable share, any tax intervention, any development that are planned, there's always the big complaint that comes through from most of the board of the committees, which comes from directly from the rural areas. And it's our question of the urban bias, planning, budgeting, all of that. Now, it's always been like that, and there's always been complaints about. Okay? But part of government policy is the whole question of rural development. Okay. Now, would you say that in this particular case, as far as equitable share is concerned, of course, you're right, it's not something that we can talk in this committee. This is a policy debate. And maybe the paper that Barbara is already drawing up needs to take cognizance of the part of the discussion. Is that in this case we're talking about really and a rural bias in terms of the equitable share, and that's how we believe we begin to deal with some of the problems. Because I agree with you that if there is no money to pay them, it's not going to help us to begin to exercise place within the rural municipality. We're going to have to compete with other people from the private sector as well. So, don't you think once you're looking at these broader political discussions, not political discussions, policy debates that we need to have, I wanted to know, have you also, I'm sure you are aware of what the legislation says, what CSMA says, and what the Constitution says in what the municipalities also report to do. Okay. Now, don't you also think that at the end of the day, we're also looking at the sticking point in terms of what the Constitution allows us.
I think the chairperson actually asked the question, should we have evolved so quickly to the municipality in the rural area, is that the only solution? Now, the Constitution states all municipalities in the same way. To go to the schedule, everyone is treated the same. But let's just make some observations of what happens when the department tries to do more. In the MOPO at one stage, and I haven't got the exact year, but I think it must have been a while ago. The department was 450,000 people or households. I will get the exact figure. People per year in the MOPO. The municipality took over. I did a regional bank on money, and I think they dropped to 23,000. So 450,000 people, 23,000 people the next year. They were obviously not ready to catch the implementation responsibility. Now, if you go to, say, the party in the new party, there's a transition right now where the party is handing stuff over to the The problem is that if we want to open to some useful services entity, and that will resolve the problem. Of course it won't, because there's no money in the municipal services entity or utility or company that needs to be occupied. They haven't. The staff are half the time, and they're not talking to others. The reason is, you say they don't want to pick up the phone. So, if you are driving well under the department, maybe it shouldn't have been under the park. Maybe it should be under National Water Agency or under the Water Board. But it was running well. The municipality doesn't have a system to take those shots. negative advice is like no that can really say. And they can't even meet the standards of family and car allowance and little less that the department was able to do. They can't accept them even as equal parents. So they think, well, we start a meaningful system of interview with this result of problem. But it's the same question. We can't pay all business players the same brush. In certain areas, you need heavier central government or provincial or some other agency responsibility. Where others, Cape Town, they don't even need the orders. Joburg, Durban would probably also like to take over Germany, as Germany would like to take over Germany. You've got some areas where municipal players are very strong and the constitution works. Other areas, which come from a much lower financial base, much lower industrial base, it could be one of them, I don't know the answer, that's what the answer to be right. Can we possibly find another position which you can find in line with everything we hold to the
Good morning. Sorry for being a little bit late, but the procedure here. Oh, and I only heard about it this morning.
Oh, bye.
If you continue talking, it means that your invitation already
it is always a privilege for me to come to the portfolio committee to discuss the issues that face our country. Madam Chair and members, we from the Rainwater Board have been a privilege to make your comment on the proposed changes and challenges that faces us with regard to the review of the Water Quality Act. Okay, as they will be distributing the copies, I just want to indicate, to build on an issue that was raised by the members here and also the Department of Water Affairs, which relates to a section in the Water Services Act, section 4.5, which deals with the issue of limiting of water, which is a matter which really affects all the water bodies. This section, we know that there is a procedure spelled out wherein if you have to limit or discontinue the water, there is a procedure to be followed. But that procedure indicates that you have to inform the other water service institution, you have to inform the relevant province, and then you also have to inform the minister. The first proposal that we are making is that you also need to inform the Minister of National Fisheries and also indicate the and also inform the Minister of DPLG.
I don't think that's right.
Yes. This will assist us to ensure that we tighten the responsibility and accountability. We do not only have thought about in the event where we have got a dispute, have to only inform the Minister of Water Affairs and the MEC in the province. We suggested that the section 4.5 should include the informing of the Minister of National Treasury and the Minister of DPLG. We are saying this, knowing very well that the section 44 of the Municipal Finance Management Act, which came after the Water Services Act, makes provision as to how to deal with an event where there is a dispute between a municipality and a water board. So we are saying we will be strengthening the Water Services Act because we include reference to those two sections, to those two persons or authorities which are referred to in the Public Finance Management Act, which are referred to in the Municipal Finance Management Act. That is the one clear proposal that we are making. As we go forward to the committee, we are proposing that there is a need for alignment between the KFMA and the Water Services Act. And this matter was captured in the presentation of the department. In terms of the KFMA, the KFMA talks about the corporate plan. Why the Water Services Act talks about the Water Services, it talks about the different plan. There is a need to align these two documents for purposes of the water service institutions, water boards in particular. And we are proposing that we perhaps move the terminology from what currently stands in the Water Service Act to that of the Public Finance Management Act. Secondly, if we look at the planning period between the Water Services Act and the Public Finance Management Act, the MPM period is 3 years. The Water Services Act talks about 5 years, that the business plan must be prepared for a 5 year period, when the PFMA is talking about a 3 year period, which is an MPM period. It is in this case we think that aspect of the work of the Public Finance Management Act in as far as planning is concerned should be aligned to the 5 year period so that we have got the same duration. This juncture in terms of keywords, planning keywords, makes it, it gives a challenge in a sense in terms of planning of planning. For example, if we go to a municipality who is owing us, they will have a different plan than what we as the workforce will be having. They will be telling you that their equitable share is only for a specific duration. That's why others are not in a position to pay. But again, the key on what we're doing here is liability of the water force, because we're talking for the sake of the water force. And if we think about the client, that's the example from our colleague here. I always indicated when we mentioned here that the water force, whose debtors are standing at very high, showed that they are facing a new challenge. They have been able to continue to address the title type debtors outstanding. And as the honorable member has indicated, the honorable RM, if those were the hopes to be disestablished, there will be more trouble in that area. So what we rather need to do is to strengthen their collection ability in terms of strengthening the section that we have mentioned in the Water Services Act, in sync with subsection 44 of the Financial Management Act. Because I am just thinking for myself, if we look at the water force in general, if the debtors outstanding to the right were applicable to the water force to the left, those water force would have collapsed. And the collapse of those water force could have been huge and detrimental. So what this review process should do should actually work towards ensuring that this institution, the water boards and all the water utilities, are strengthened to allow the department and government to realize these objectives. Again, I have spoken to this issue in my introduction. There is another sticking issue, servitudinal issue. The pipelines through which we transport water are our major assets. Without those pipelines, we are not able to transport water, even if there can be water in the reservoir. So what is happening at the moment is that because of the challenges that exist between the water board and municipalities, you find that people are building next to this the service shoes, next to our pipeline, our infrastructure is not there. Not protected. And what it says, what we know is that in terms of Section 81 of the Water Services Act, water boards can expropriate property or services only with the written approval of the minister. But we're thinking that this should be strengthened to also bring the Minister of Local Government into play as well, so that it's not only the Minister of Water Affairs who faces this challenge. There is a need to, through legislation, to bring the minister together to take responsibility and accountability on this matter. And because of the magnitude of the expropriation that we are having at Water Board, it is important that the Minister of Water has considered to delegate the processing of this application for expropriation to the Director General. Because as it is written at the moment, it means all the requests for appropriation, which we view to be an administrative matter, will have to go to the Minister. The Water Services Act is silent on actions that Water Board can take to keep its services clear of any encroachment. This is where we are saying the legislation, the amendments that we are bringing in, must promote or engender more partnership between local government and water board to ensure that we move towards resolving this problem because of its impact on the assets of the water board. Knowing very well that if these assets are not protected, this community government is not able to reach its millennium goal. 2012, will not be able to reach its national height. Because this institution, with its infrastructure, are the instruments that government, this committee, everybody has used to accomplish the goals and mandate of government. Right. There is another issue which we have got a proposal on, which relates to the appointment of the chief executive of the water board. The chief executive is appointed by the board, but the minister sets the ceiling in terms of the package. We are proposing that that process, we are proposing a timeline to be attached to that process, and we're proposing a 30-day period that the whole process from submission to the minister through the process until approval. We're proposing a 30-day period, but we strongly are satisfied that there is responsibility and caring of the package and matters related thereto been resident in the minister's jurisdiction. Thank you very much. These are some of the few proposals that we have crafted from the Water Service Act, but from Bronx Water Service, we have got a long document where the Water Service Review Bill was analyzed point by point. It's about a few pages, 15 pages, which will be given to the committee. So what we've just done here, we just gave an overview of the sticking points that relates to the liability, which we think if they can be attached in this document, will assist us to realize the objective. The last point that I should just indicate, as I told, is the issue that relates to Section 41 of the Water Services Act, directed to Water Board by the Minister. The Minister may direct the Water Board to undertake certain actions on behalf of the Department. Again, this was clearly indicated that many water boards have been called upon to come and assist municipalities, and this water board has done that. But the Act says the water board can only be called upon to assist viable municipalities. There are instances where water boards are called upon to assist municipalities which are not viable. And the Act again says this water board will be called to undertake these activities at their cost. So perhaps we also need to strengthen it to indicate that in the instances where the water, the municipality is not viable at all, we may consider to also request, we can also request that the department consider that when a mandate is given to the water board, some resources should be provided as well for the water, enable the water board to undertake that function. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Francis. You got me confused. Can I welcome you in your capacity of Grand Water? I think we've got Grand Water and the Pennsylvania. Honourable members, I think they came with very clear, specific, and we obviously welcome the bigger package that you have that you can hand over to us. A couple of things, third of all, the International Water Act, it's not a problem because I think we're still going to get to the National Water Act.
Thank you, Chair. I'm looking forward to actually receiving the document, but once we've spoken in the committee, you always say a great way. So I just have one or two. I was just wondering, in relation to expropriation, you believe, you said that the Minister of local government should also be involved. Alright? So I'm a bit confused there. If you want to expropriate a servitude, wouldn't it take much longer than it's taking now? If more than one minister is involved, that's the one question. Would you want to rather, speed the process up, and add to the number of people that have to take a decision, wouldn't that slow the process down? I suppose they get that part of it. And then also, if the power to make decisions are delegated by the minister to the DG, what role do you then see for the minister in making a decision? Because expropriation isn't a matter that can be taken lightly. What do you perhaps foresee that the minister would be would play up that if one is appropriate for me, I would be able to appeal to the minister. Just explain the minister's role once the function or the decision making power is delegated to the DG. And if more than one minister is involved and both ministers do the same by giving the power of decision to the DG, I mean, what role? I'm just a little confusion as to how you really see that part.
What is it that what is it that you will be benefiting out of the water at water board? Or is it going to affect the water board doing anything if they are aligned with the true etiquette? And also on this question of honorable answer, I just want to follow up by asking whether sometimes you are saying things out of experience. Have you been experiencing any problem when it's done by the Minister of Water Affairs? What is it that makes you want to add another minister in to you? I think you need to realize some problems. So what is it that really pushes you to this?
Okay, and followed by
I think on the proposals that have been made to the city, there are these proposals that need to be found, and I think the proper group should look at it for the smooth functioning, and I think we should take the necessary steps to bring about the changes that have been approved. And then across the board and generally on the whole question of the function of the water itself.
So in short, what you're actually saying, I just try to explain them. Okay, so in short, what you're actually trying to say is take the power away from the municipalities to put in infrastructure, to build pipelines, with all those types of things, make sure that everyone has water, and just give them the opportunity to collect the money at a percentage and pay the rest over to the water board. So are you meaning then, especially when you say the two departments have to come together and strategize, is it in your view, maybe better for future planning, that the water board are going to do everything relating to water, and the municipalities only collect the money and pay it over to you? I just want to get the idea of what you're thinking about.
Thank you. perversion is going to sound, but it is very nevertheless. One of the sectors that water and rely on private to do their work is the private sector also. There's been several accusations that water are being privatized in South Africa. To the extent where there was a reform festival here in Cape Town, and there was a couple of community organizations involved. The quite cool guy asked me, can you please not make some space for me to attend this because it was about water being documented. They said, no, I can't come in because you are privatizing water. Nevertheless, there is the accusation that our law does lend itself to creeping in of privatization through the role of the private sector. And I think, Ms. Ramson, you yourself mentioned the fact that the private sector is able to, you know, the municipality does give their services to private entities where they see that they don't have the capacity. And they don't even realize they are opting out of the public sector in the manner that they do. And some of them have created structures in order that we saw this thing. And they were trying to persuade us about the structures that are outside of. I do want to ask the question, isn't it that our legislation gives them that power? And have we sufficiently been able to build a case to say that we are lending, again, we are contradicting the constitution that says, you know, the custodian is the minister, but through other provisions, the given sufficient and have privatized the water through all these different provisions that are there now, whether it's in the act or other acts. But we're asking this question because it's been put to us all the time through other acts that have come subsequently after the two acts. But over to yourself.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I will start with the issue of the amendment appropriation bill. I would just let the analyst or legal advisor comment on that. I am personally not aware of that. The role of the two ministers, I mean, certain of the issues when they come from members, you in the process learn and see that this is not the interpretation that I have. It is our view in this case that perhaps we should say the Minister of Local Government will be informed. Because in South Africa we have got a wall-to-wall municipality. All this pipeline run in one municipal area or the other. It is for that purpose that we think that, because if there is no water in there, the municipality is going to suffer. At the end, the political head of that municipality is the Minister of Local Government. And we are thinking that perhaps we should not say that they do it together. We should say the minister should be kept informed. And if the minister is informed, if that process persists within that specific municipality, then there is room for the minister of local government to intervene. The issue of whether there are benefits that may accrue to from the alignment between the Water Services Act and the Public Finance Management Act, we are confident from the side of Water Board that if we can have this alignment, there will be benefits. For example, there will be benefits in the sense that there will be joint plans. The plans of the municipalities and the plans of the Water Board and that of the department will be able to talk to each other. I'll give you an example that relates to reporting. The Water Services Act indicates that the annual report of Water Board should be submitted to the department 4 months after year end. when the PFMA says 5 months after year end. So again, there is a disjunction between the reporting deadline presented by the PFMA and that of the Water Services Act. If we do that, then we will be able to jointly plan, and our plan will fit into each other. But if there is this difference, there is always a problem with regard to planning. So I ask that with the question of what is the problem with one minister alone dealing with it. I have acknowledged that it is the document threatens our proposal. So the proposal should be, the minister should be informed, but not participate as one of the decision makers in terms of expropriation. But in the event where they have problems, his intervention or her intervention could be solved. The question that came about the insinuation that power should be taken away from municipalities and let the water boards do the work with them by collecting the money and paying it over to. I would like to indicate that the experience that we have seen on the ground is where there is a good relationship between the municipality and the water board, there has been good progress in terms of the management of the infrastructure. But where there is conflict, the maintenance of the infrastructure has not been up to standard, and in certain instances, the assurance of supply could not be guaranteed. So we think if there can be, through the service level agreement, there is a service level agreement that has been agreed between SAU and SAU. If we could stick to that, there can be progress. But at the moment, even if we have got that service level agreement, not many water boards, I don't know what the percentage would be, but quite a few service level agreements are outstanding. The issue of Section 78 from Madam Chair, it is clearly a Section 78 process is clearly slowing the process down. I know in other municipal, in other service areas, you'll find that for the past 4 or 5 years, there has been discussion about who, to whom must the infrastructure be transferred. And because that matter has not been been finalized, the municipality itself, the WSA, cannot invest in that infrastructure because the decision has not been taken. Neither can the water board invest in that particular infrastructure. The infrastructure is there. Both the partners have got funds that they can invest, but they cannot invest because the issue of ownership is still outstanding. So it is really threatening the refurbishment and the maintenance of the infrastructure. Laws allow for private sector involvement. Yes, in terms of the Water Services Act, there is a room for the role of the private sector. Although we've always taken a position that it is not the water that we are privatizing, but it is the infrastructure too. It is the infrastructure too. To deliver the water that is privatized. Because even in the case where we are in a public-private partnership, in that case, those specific private sector partners own the infrastructure, yes, but do not own the water per se. So that is why we are always criticized as government and as government institutions that will privatize the water. We keep on trying to explain this, but if this explanation does not always make sense to everybody, which means that through the stakeholder consultative processes, this issue needs to be hammered upon from time to time. The extra detail on expropriation, I would request our legal advisor Alaric to deal with. Thank you.
Thank you, honourable members. Yes, we think we have given the opportunity to comment on the expropriation board which we have, and the same proposal that is made here is given to the consultants that have been delegated to interview on So we hope that the appropriation will not dominate the board of these issues that we are experiencing with regard to the appropriation of our services. So I think in the bill, but also in telling us at some point that that bill, that the block also has maybe input into the bill. I think for all the reasons that we've had, that we've heard here, people sometimes think expropriation is to be land, not land and water. Obvious that there are slightly separate still because of the act taken into consideration. I think we'll have a conversation with the department about that act because we do think that something needs to be done with. Honourable members, can we thank the presentation that we had? I want to ask if we can't take a breather. And do you want to carry on? Okay, then we'll. Okay. Can we take a breather? I'm sure there should be some water or something also outside, and then we'll take, I think it is
Okay.
After the break. Thank you very much. A comfort break.
Sorry, those are for the members of Parliament.
Yes.
You've got a limited number.
Yes. Let me see the piece.
No, there are members that are not here. Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. 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 That's the Kyle.
Sorry about that.
Okay.
Here you are.
Yeah, I think it's fine. Yeah.
Sorry.
Mad.
Wrong couple.
Otherwise, I'll put something else in.
parliamentary luncheon group.
The parliamentary?
Luncheon group.
It's not the right thing. Maybe you might get another visitor. Oh, I'll let you know, but then you get my name and everything comes, but I think you also give me the I can't find it. I haven't found my proper card. So this is from another company who was involved with. But my address and all the details are still the same. And that's one of the subjects I would like to talk about. So very important. So we'll see. Solutions for our ever-increasing problems. you won't find these solutions so much in the big established companies, because they basically are they are based on chemical solutions, on the reverse osmosis, on UV solutions. Everything that is either destructive or very, very expensive. That is one of the things. Please be willing to listen more to the others, because they are not listened to, really. I've been at so many seminars, I've talked to so many people, I came up with so many solutions. For instance, we have a solution, we don't need it now anymore, I guess, that works for heart disease for them, where it definitely is not necessary to wrench that dam of all the silk and the sludge. Made propositions, everything, nothing came out of it. Anyway, my name is Helga Dietrich. I am working with a technology that was developed in Germany and Switzerland for 15 years. We are successfully working in more than 30 countries in the meantime. And I am the local representative. I've worked now 15 years in many different ways and also trials in South Africa and in other countries. But unfortunately, it hasn't been possible yet for us to really be heard. In the contrary, it feels sometimes if one gets stumbled or whatever, but I will come to that. Alright, what do we do? We have alternative ways of saving or treating our resources. And here I want to talk about water. When you think that most of our rivers are nowadays very much polluted, some are even contaminated, our dams, our lakes are eutrophic. Eutrophic means, as we have it at the moment at the Kruger National Park, with the blue algae, also something we can take care of in a natural manner. Then you wonder what has gone wrong. What has gone wrong is the following. Basically, what one needs to know about water. Water must be alive. Water is vital. Water is a nutrient. Water is important for everything on this planet. It's the most important commodity, and we must take better care of it. But now what happens is, normal water has a very strong self-cleansing ability. That self-cleansing ability takes care of organic pollution up to a certain extent, of course. But when there comes chemical pollution, water cannot break down these unorganic substances. And suddenly we get too many nutrients in our rivers and our dams and so on. Algae grow, algae take the oxygen out of the water. Water becomes later on, as I said before, eutrophic. It's a death, it's a polluted, it's the water you can't use anymore. We have the means and the ways of, in comparison to anything else, very inexpensively and easily and naturally to solve these problems. But what we say is, and that I think is very important, one must not always go and try and solve the problems. One must try to avoid the causes. That is very important. Now that is what is closest to our heart. Yes, we will go and solve a problem. But then we would like, because we don't want to go on, it costs only more money and more money, go on and solving this problem. After we have solved, gave it a start, let's say a river or a dam, which is now in a very bad situation, we will do the dam, we will work on the dam, and it will have the most beautiful reports from all over the world, even the Holy Lake in India, and so on, which were strongly polluted, which had high silt layers and are now clean again, are open for human bathing, swimming, and so on. We have that also in Germany. I've got it from all over. Now, when we do such a, what we all have to think about, treating the problems costs money continuously. So we've got to look at the causes and try to prevent these causes, which in most cases are quite simple and quite easy to do. But of course, one needs a certain form of legislation. if, for instance, I'm saying that a pig farmer can release his effluent into a river and is not highly fined, or this is not prohibited by law, then the pollution will go on. If an industry is allowed to release their effluent into a river, into a dam, into a lake, then we have the same thing, even into the sea, we have the same thing. So these are the things which we can do. Now, I don't know how much time I have, that's why I don't want to go too far. I would like to go to another point now. Groundwater. Groundwater gets easily polluted through everything I said before. We can clean that groundwater. We, for instance, in some areas of in South Africa, we have huge problems of lime. Lime is very expensive because it kills the heating element in the laundry, in households, in industry, anywhere. In big farms like dairy farms, they have a big problem with it. Not a problem for us anymore. I just would like to point this out. Also, iron in the water. But I would like to come to a totally other point. If in 2003, there was a big article in all South African newspapers with a chart of South Africa, stating at that time that by 2025, the Free State and the Cape, most of the Cape, maybe not the year down here, will have turned into a desert. I asked myself then, how if that happens? Because of climate change. How if that happens, are we going to feed the millions out there? And we all know nothing is worse than hungry people. When they start running, we don't know them anymore. And also it is not right. We have to look after our people. We have to make sure. Now, what can we do there? For instance, one of my thoughts was, we are capable of converting effluent water that comes out of the sewage plant, but please, not with chlorine. You're causing more destruction in a natural way. Put this into pipelines. I've written many papers about this. I made plans on how much water one would leave and so on. Say, putting that water into pipelines and selling it to the farmer out there, to these farmers who will supply food for our people. Not to maybe luxury farmers. I mean, look, wine farm also employs a lot of people. It's also important. But is it important for survival of our people? Most probably not. So rather give it to the ones who grow the vegetables, the food, the grains. So I wrote a paper saying not a drop of sweet water must go into the sea. Once it is into the sea, ladies and gentlemen, it is lost. It is lost forever. We can't get it back. So since we don't have unlimited sweet water resources, we must make sure that sweet water is kept for these purposes, for what we need it, namely for the drinking of our population. For irrigation, for many other things, we can recycle water in a natural manner. And this is what we are offering, this is what we are proposing. Let us help there, let us do this. Let us come in and prove it to you. Now comes another very important point. Okay, we can do groundwater, surface water, wastewater. There's another interesting thing I would like to mention. We have continuously coming new residential areas coming up. Some are quite far out from town. Now, when I started my investigation, that's about 3 years ago, the erection of a normal size sewage plant did cost 100 million rand. The maintenance of the sewage plant per year was about 45 million rand. That's an enormous amount, but that is just the sewage plant and the maintenance. The piping has to go into the ground, the connection has to be done over miles. We can do that much simpler. We don't need a sewage plant. Let us say, for instance, I have an example from Northern Africa where we did it. It was a small town of 20,000 inhabitants. We can also go to 30,000, 40,000, where we had, I think it was 2 hectares of land next to it, and it became a beautiful area like Kyoto. There was a natural sewage plant. At the end, we had clear water.
That clear water we can again use. Number one. Now think about, why do we need wet, sweet water in our toilet? That's ridiculous. We don't need that. So we take this water, this effluent water that has been treated very fine, with a small pipeline, bring it back to the toilet, flush it goes back into the system, it's like recycled. Saves us billions of liters of sweet water that we don't have so much in the future anymore. The remaining water that comes out of such a natural sewage plant, you could have from me the whole document. We can use for, let us say, RDP housing or whatever. Maybe we need to beautify the area under them. We can use the water for fire extinguishing. We can use that, the remaining water, and send it also to farms and to industry where they don't need potable water. You don't need for everything potable water. You can use other water and save that potable water. Furthermore, I would like to say that, and this is also available, that I have a few years ago made potable water from Zambezia water. One of the most polluted rivers in South Africa. I did it behind Paul, where it's getting even worse. After Paul area. I mean, potable water without using electricity, without chemicals, without reverse osmosis, without UV, you mustn't use anyway because you're killing the water. Water must be alive. So that is well, I don't know how much time I have. So I don't know how far I can go, but I would like to come to another point, to two other points quickly. That's the soil. Now, the water department and the forestry department, every department, must be also very much concerned about our soils. Now, what does one find in South Africa? You find it in the potato industry, you find it with well from there, you find sandstorms there, because the fields are laying bare for 2 or 3 years. That is detrimental to the soil, to the microbial life in the soil, to the erosion. It just shouldn't be. So it is very important that our laws, the soils are, or even if they are, if the fields are kept dormant, if they are in a resting phase, which is really not necessary if it's for alternative agriculture, but that's a different story. But we must always make sure that our soils are covered. Only if they are covered can we, because this, I think, nobody knows exactly, but I think we will get that. We'll get long, long periods of drought in the future, and then suddenly we get something like monsoon type of rain. And you've all seen the pictures in TV, what they cause. Erosion, landslides, and then all the good soil is gone. So the soil is also very important that it has sponginess, that it has humus, that it has water retention capacity, and not just run through like in the center, and then take all the nutrients and go into the groundwater and pollute that groundwater. So these are all things where we are really very, very good in, and where we work in many countries. It's just something I wanted to touch here, so I know. And now another important point. Our carbon footprint is quite high in this country. Now, we are all interested because we signed the Kyoto Paper and this and that, and also for our own survival. We are all interested in reducing our carbon footprint and, in the contrary, if possible, earn carbon credits. You know, that is a big business nowadays. So now, where can we start? Everything I mentioned before that has to do with the soil and composting, I didn't go into this, but I mentioned it on that paper shortly. All that has to do, whatever we do, we can earn, or the government, or whoever has it in, with these projects, carbon credits. We do not cause any pollution. We stop emissions. We stop the breakdown of the end in manure, in urine and so on, into ammonia, one of the biggest pollutants of our atmosphere. We bind the end. The end is a very, very important factor in agriculture, in fertilizing. We bind the end. No emissions. We earn carbon credits. Now, coming to that very last point now, it's very, very, very close to my heart. Every town in South Africa, but not only in South Africa, but now I'm living in South Africa, I call myself a South African, so I want to work here. Even though end of the month I'm supposed to go to Nigeria, because they want me now to start what I'm talking about now, yeah, and water project. Every town in South Africa has a problem. Well, many problems, but one problem, and that's the waste management. Waste is a very big problem. Now, I'm not saying I can manage every waste. I'm not in the recycling of plastics and so on. I know nothing about this. This is not my expertise. My expertise is organic matter. Now, if you consider that until the mid-1800s, it was natural throughout the world to use manure and human sludge for fertilization. Then came the big revolution, and suddenly the human sludge was, no, we use the pig, we use the cow, we use the horse, but suddenly we don't use the human sludge anymore. Why? It was, just became modern. But in the meantime, it does have a reason, because we're taking a lot of chemicals to us, in form of medicine, in form of antibiotics, and so on. But what we forget, all our animals here, something that is long time outlawed in Europe, and not yet in South Africa, and that's very bad for our environment, is that we still allow the farmer, the pig farmer, the dairy farmer, the poultry, broilers, or whatever, to give the young animals antibiotics and growth hormones. It's ridiculous. We can do that much different naturally, and we do it in many cases. Now, these antibiotics go into your groundwater. They go in the soil, they go in the plants. They destroy the beneficial microbes and bacteria in these environments. They are taken up by plants, they are taken up by the humans, by the animals, and as you might know, more and more people every day become resistant to antibiotics. That's another point. There's over 1,000 scientists searching throughout the world for new antibiotics because we can't heal the people anymore. Because we still allow here in this country antibiotics to be used as so-called growth hormones. Now, I would like to all think personally, if your mother, when you were a little child, would have thought, oh, this is my child, I'm going to look after him very well, I'm going to give him antibiotics. What would you be nowadays? A type of a zombie. You would be living from nothing else but medication. Why? Because your mother didn't allow you to build up an own immune system. The same thing we do with these poor animals out there. So, stopping this and going a different way, for which we have the solution, means not only reducing the cost for the farmer, which at the end means maybe also reducing the cost for the consumer, but also having a healthier environment. This is very, very important. It seems not to be taken in here in South Africa. I do not know why. But it's such an important subject that I can only put all my emphasis on this. Please, think about it, consider it. If you want to know more, please talk to me. Okay, right. Now, coming back to the sludge, that's my last point.
Half a minute?
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. I didn't know I was a time limit. I'm here for the first time, please. Anyway, we have a proposition to make. If we take, not me, I would be a small party, but other people must come in. We take all the human sludge of all the cities in South Africa. We turn that in, and we have the means. I'm willing to do a trial at Stellenbosch University with Professor Jobert and Professor Dirk. Take all the sludge, turn it into a healthy, good commodity that does not have emissions anymore, that earns carbon credit, that is good for our environment, good for our soils, and good for our people to produce food. And these are composting plants. We were ready to start one. At that time, 4 or 5 years ago, I was blocked off by the MIIU. I'm glad they're not there anymore. But I wanted to start in Cape Town, but this is made impossible due to a Cape Town-owned legislation, I think it's only Cape Town, where now the people who transport the sludge must also be take care of that sludge. I wanted to see these contracts because I know you have been at the offices here in Cape Town. I said, this is what's going on in Philadelphia, the crime, bring us proof. I brought proof. And when I brought the proof, they, Oti Atmara, I think it was, wanted to take it, and I never heard from her, I didn't hear it. Anyway, there are solutions to some of our biggest problems, and all I want is you to wake up and maybe get in contact with me. There is one or two other companies that could also do that, but there's only very few, less than a handful, who can do what we do. And that is really my bringing this over, showing you the needs which you will know, but showing there are solutions. And one of my biggest things is this getting rid of the human flesh. The landfills are full. We don't know what they are doing. We know that 70 tons of somehow raw sludge is deposited on a hectare of land in the Philadelphia area. It thinks the animals are getting sick, they are dying. The groundwater, and that is using the groundwater gets polluted. So it's a big mess. Okay. I'm sorry if I took a bit longer, but there is so much to say, I could go on for hours, but I hope that maybe a few are getting a little bit curious and wanting to speak and are getting together and trying to do something there. Not that please. I ask you.
Yeah. Switch on your mic, please.
Yeah.
No, thank you very much for taking the time and effort to come to us. I know in my conversation with you, you said that some of the changes of the legislative implications, so I think I'll take into consideration what I said earlier on that you feel that somewhere in the legislation, not all of these things are being catered for, and yes. I think we will have to.
But we have to look in the study.
Double check that. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for your
thoughts. Am I reading?
Yes, you may go. After I say thank you to you. Thank you very much for your thought-provoking lunch.
It's not a clean subject, but it can be made clean.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And thank you all for listening.
Okay. Sure. Honourable members, we are... concluding, I'm not sure, in game he has a turnaround, and they did not come. Well, they did not compel them to come, it was really everyone was saying that they wanted to come and respond to the alert that we gave everyone. Let me say that in concluding this discussion on the Water Services Act, I think it's been useful listening to some of the issues that were placed before us yesterday. But at the end of the day, also members, we obviously have to decide what do we do from here. Because each legislation that we have spoken from, and if I may, I don't think the government have been able to sufficiently look at everything for the moment. And I don't think that we probably have had sufficient people from different parts of our society coming to talk about the Water Service Act, and particularly those that are touched by this act quite a bit, the municipalities and so on that have to deal with the Water Services Act. We heard these departments, we heard the things that they have said, but I don't know if you will share my view on the members that I think that we obviously should allow a situation where we could, because there were many people that complained that there is notification and they wanted to say some things and they are being prohibited. Well, in this instance, we are not governed by the rule that says that, you know, the date was yesterday and it stopped there and you cannot. And that I think we should obviously feel free as a committee to indicate to people that it didn't end yesterday, that they should feel free to come forward to the committee and tell us about their own experiences with the Act, both in terms of the
the challenges and also of what the good part of the activities that they still have to implement in South Africa. But let me allow you a few minutes to respond to that, and then we can bring you the meeting. No, you can't wait for me, that doesn't help. Can you put up your hand and see? I'm not from there. Could you somehow let me think better?
Excuse me, may I, before I leave, may I remark in regards to that, the experience that I have?
No, no, your time is actually spent.
Okay,
here,
fine.
Actually,
no, no, there's a question here.
No, it's only the members that can speak.
Okay,
fine.
Thank you very much. I think you have said a mouthful with regard to that we can be more concrete. We wanted to make a presentation.
Mm-hmm.
We should support you on that one. Thank you very much.
Nothing of the head means that the support, and that I think what we should do is to set that on the program on the members. But this is not the end of the discussion on the Water Services Act, because we did have some other requests that other people did want to have a say on the Act, and so I think it just was the program of the Portfolio Committee in this regard. I think what we will do, since all of you also, is to indicate to you the similar exercise that we are doing with the other acts that are within this committee, and I'm sure that the National Water Act will generate quite a lot of interest. But as for now, honourable members, tomorrow, please don't forget to come back. We're dealing with the two water boards, annual report, the three water boards that we held over the last time, and then also the one resource society organization. Thank you very much for now.
Go on. Yes, I just said something about this sludge. We get from time to time people coming to tell us this, and people come and stand today, just give us the money, we'll solve all your problems. We had the Water Research Commission project, and we gave funds to the University of Natal, we did a substantial test on some of this stuff, and that report is available. So it shows you that it's not. Not as easy as people want to make. But that's the problem with survival to you.
Thank you,
Dwan.
Please pass
on
the
report
to the lady
of the Yeah.